today we get one of our clearest, most sober, most grounded readings of the gospel reading that we ever get. I mean, seriously, who wants to stand up and preach on Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 to 37? Volunteers? Pay me enough to do this. It's hard work, and it's tempting, actually, it's tempting to avoid the whole thing. Let's read Deuteronomy. Let's talk about Deuteronomy. It's tempting, actually, to just preach exactly the same sermon that I preached last Sunday. I'll let you judge by the end of this morning whether or not I do that. Because you have to read Matthew 5, 21 to 37 in the context of the immediately preceding verse that precedes these verses, and which we read last Sunday, and which I actually had put on the front of a pew leaflet, and which I made a fairly big deal about, it seems to me. Because just before Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder," etc. Just before that, in verse 20, he says, "I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. So you have to keep in the back of your minds the scribes and the Pharisees throughout our discussion of this particular text from Matthew chapter 5. And you have to understand that for the scribes and the Pharisees, the goal of the spiritual life, the goal of the religious life, the goal of the journey of life was really one thing. The goal of life was to be a good person and to be a better and better person down the road. And so you had laws, rules, regulations, and stipulations, 633 of them or whatever it is, spelled out in your written down scriptures that you could look at and that would tell you how to be a good person, how to become a better person, how to work hard and hunker down and get it right, be righteous. Now, let's be clear, I have nothing against being a good person. I love it when people are good people. I like it when people behave well. I like it when we're respectful and loving and kind and good and compassionate towards one another. I'm a big fan of such behaviors. The problem is that for the scribes and the Pharisees, and they were good people, like I said last week, don't get me wrong, these are not bad people. In fact, they're very good people for the most part. Some of them went a little overboard and perhaps allowed their sense of what's good and right to lead them to a place of judgmentalness. But they were good people. They worked hard at keeping the law. They tried hard to get it right. But their focus was all on behavior. They wanted people to look at behavior and to define themselves in terms of their behavior. I am a good person because I have done a good thing for another person. I am a good person because I have looked after creation. I am a good person because I don't steal from the government. I am a good person because I abide by the law. I don't speed. I wear my seatbelt. I don't use my cell phone when I'm driving. All those things. Those make me a good person. Right? Wrong. They just make you a law-abiding person. That's all they do. What Jesus is doing in chapter 5, in the whole of the Sermon on the Mount, is he's taking this whole construct, this whole concept, this whole paradigm of you got to be good enough, and he's pushing it to the absolutely ludicrous extreme. He's pushing it to the place where we have to see that we can't do it. He takes the whole behavior orientation and he makes it utterly ridiculous. So, in Matthew chapter 5, in verse 29 and 30, Jesus says, if your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better to lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell. He takes this whole behavior paradigm and he just smashes it. So that we recognize we are not going to cut off our hands. We are not going to gouge out our eyes. And he already has told us in this passage that most men are guilty through their eyes of having committed adultery. So we should be in an entire civilization of half men who can only see through one eye or maybe none. What Jesus wants us to get to is the place that he points to in the parable that he tells in another gospel, Luke. Luke chapter 18. And we really need to keep this parable in the back of our minds when we're reading all of the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus also told this parable to some who trusted themselves that they were righteous. Get that? Okay, he's telling this parable to those who think they can make themselves righteous. Those who think that they can get it right. Those who think that they can be good people and behave properly. Okay? Here's the parable. To those who think they were righteous and regarded others with contempt, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, the righteous one, the one who gets it right, the one you want as your next door neighbor. You don't want a tax collector as your next door neighbor. You want the Pharisee as your next door neighbor, good person, nice person. Fix your fence for you when it's broken. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, was praying thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other people, thieves, rogues, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of all my income. See, I get my behavior right. My behavior is good. A tenth of all his income. Think about that. Man, those days are long gone. Think about that. I give a tenth of all my income. I fast twice a week. We think we're dying if we miss breakfast. This is a good guy. He's a hard worker. He's focused. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even look up to heaven, but was beating his breast and saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And then Jesus concludes, I tell you, this man, the breastfeeder, the tax collector, went down to his home justified rather than the other. Jesus had obviously read, except of course hadn't been written yet, Romans chapter 3, verse 23, in which Paul says, "All have sinned and fall short of what? The glory of God." That's our call. That's what we're called to be. We are called to be manifestations of the glory of God. How are you doing with that project today? Have you fallen just a teensy bit short yet of the glory of God? Of course you have. I know you're all nice people. I know you all mean well. But you have fallen short of the glory of God. We have all failed. The best we can hope for is to stand before God and beat our breasts and say, "Have mercy on us. Forgive us. We fail and we fail and we fail." That's what we do best. And nobody's left out. People read this chapter and they look at Jesus talking about divorce and they go, "Ooh, divorce, that's bad." They don't look at anger. Well, what does he say about anger? He says, "Angry, you're going to be thrown. You deserve to be thrown." You say you fooled somebody. You deserve to be thrown into jail. And you know what? You'll never get out until you pay the last penny. And you know what? You don't have any pennies. You're in jail. You can't pay to get yourself out. This whole chapter is driving us, pushing us to recognize, as Jesus says near the end, you cannot even make one hair on your head, white or black. I've been working at making mine pretty white lately, but I can't do that. We are powerless. We are unable. What needs to happen is we have to shift our whole paradigm. And the place we have to shift our paradigm to is away from behavior and towards the heart. Away from behavior and towards the heart. The heart is the place that Jesus is always driving us to. A little bit later in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 15, verse 19, Jesus will say, "For out of the heart come evil intentions, murder, adultery, fornication, theft, false witness, and slander." So don't try hard not to be a murderer. Don't try hard not to commit adultery. Jesus has pointed out, you can't do it anyway. Don't try hard to get your behavior right. Try hard to get your heart right. Try hard to open your heart to the depth and the beauty of life. Try hard to open your heart to that gentleness that is your true nature. See, the terrible, terrible sadness in this whole thing is that the scribes and Pharisees should have known this. They shouldn't have made the mistake of thinking that what God is primarily concerned with is behavior. In our first reading from the book of Deuteronomy, Moses says to the people, God speaking through Moses, "If your heart turns away and you do not hear but are led astray to bow down to other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall perish." See, the problem with the behavior focus is that what it does is it keeps us focused on the surface of life. And the surface of life is not where real life takes place. The surface of life is just the stuff that's happening. It's just the circumstances of our day. It's just the events, the people, stuff that goes on. And it's important to pay attention to that. It's important to honor that. It's important to recognize that the events of our lives have significance. But the real significance lies of life. The real significance lies in the human heart. And unless the heart gets right with love, unless the heart finds its way to that place of openness and truth and purity and light, we will never become the righteousness of God to which we are called. See, if we stay focused on behavior, we can't do the things that we were really created to do. One of those things that we were really created to do, Jesus points to in verses 23 and 24, where he says, "So, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there, remember that your brother has something against you. Leave your gift there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift." You hear a lot of talk these days about reconciliation. There's a great move across our country to find ways to reconciliation, to find ways of healing, of restoring relationship. But if our attempts at reconciliation are only based on legal precedent, only based on behavior, only based on who does what and who did what and who deserves what and who should gain what and who should be in charge, we will never find our way to reconciliation. The word that in Greek that Jesus is said to have used for reconciliation here is dialeso. It comes from two words, dia and lasso. Dia is through, and lasso comes from the word alos, which means to make different or change. Reconciliation only comes about when our whole paradigm is changed. True reconciliation requires a radical new way of thinking, a radical new way of seeing the world and seeing human relationships. And if you want to know what that looks like, well, unfortunately, Jesus is happy to tell you. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. Jesus is talking here about a relationship that goes beyond adversarial, confrontational, dualistic, right and wrong, good and bad, in and out. He's offering a totally different paradigm. A paradigm in which we come to see that, unlike the tax collector in the parable from Luke, we are not other than the one whom we want to demonize and who we see ourselves as separate from. We are all one. We are connected. And that's why Jesus hammers so hard on behavior in this chapter. Because he leaves no place for anyone to say, "Oh, well, those sinners are over there, and I am over here." There's no way to look at this and say, "Well, those people are wrong over there, and we're right over here." There's no way to say, "Those are the bad people over there, and we're the good people over here." There is only one category of human being: flawed, frail, broken, and imperfect. That's who we are. And the call of Jesus is to find a deeper place within ourselves, a deeper place that transcends that brokenness, a deeper place that goes to a truth and a beauty and a light and a strength that is more real than all the messes and all the confusion and all the pain that we've ever caused or seen in the world around us. We are not defined by difference. We are not defined by who's in and who's out. We are not defined by good guys and bad guys. We are not defined by our behavior. We are defined by what is in our hearts. And what is in our hearts is the presence, the light, the beauty, the truth, and the goodness of God known to us in Jesus the Christ. So there's no room left for judgment. There's no room left for separation. There's no room left for me to stand before anybody and say, I have made the grave, and you should live like me so that you can make the grave too. There's only room for one, the one who stands before God and sees Christ. He says, God, forgive me. I am a sinner. I have failed. I have fallen short. And then we receive a little piece of bread and a sip of wine, saying, this, deeper than all that, deeper than your failures, deeper than the brokenness of life, this is who you are. You are the light of the world, the glory of God, the beauty of Christ living in your life. Take it in, and allow it to fill your being with goodness.